This week on Three Questions with Corey Kareem.
I had what we call internalized homophobia. I didn't like that I was queer. I didn't want to be gay. I didn't want it because my father told me it's a phase. So I was like, and the society said it's not right. And the church said I'm going to hell. All these things, right?
Now, before we get started with this beautiful conversation, please help a brother out and click on that follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Enjoy the conversation.
Welcome back, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Three Questions with Corey Kareem, the podcast where we sit down with some amazing people who are doing some amazing things. And that's right. You guessed it. We ask them three questions, sometimes 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I know. I read the comments. But rather than just focus on my guests, their wins or their successes, we tend to start the conversation around their failures and then we expand from there. But more specifically, we like to focus on the lessons that they learn from those individual experiences. So with that being said, my guest today originally hails all the way from Nigeria, but now lives in Atlanta. And previously, she resided in the great state of Texas, God. She has embarked on a remarkable journey that spans across medicine, the military, and advocacy. She's a semi-retired pediatrician who ascended to the rank of Lieutenant Colonel Commander in United States Air Force. Wow. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, y'all. Not content with conventional success, our guest has become an award-winning LGBTQ plus advocate, carving out a path as an educator and sought-after corporate consultant. Her passion for inclusivity and understanding has earned her accolades and positioned her as a leading voice in the LGBTQ plus community. What's more is she's a literary force to be reckoned with. She's the author of 2 books, and she was featured on Oprah. Need I say more? So without further ado, y'all, Dr. Lulu, welcome to the podcast.
I am the author of 7 books.
Seven books.
I forgive you. I guess it's a trilogy at this point. I'm publishing 3 books this year. I want it to be 10, round number. Why not?
I love it. I love the goal.
Yes.
There you go. I got 7 books. Goal is to be 10. Yes. Corrected. So, Dr. Lulu, yes. I know that I gave you a bit of an intro there, but we both know, and my guest and my audience doesn't know, that you have quite the resume. So, for my audience, for my listeners, why don't you tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
So the first question I have for you is, how much time do you have? We've got 55 years to put into, 40 minutes.
What can you put in 60 seconds?
I know this. I was just going to say the 60-second version is, I was born, bred, buttered, and slightly burned in Nigeria. I love saying that because it's true. Mm. I was born in Nigeria, and I was slightly burned in Nigeria. Yes, my skin is mocha, chocolata, but you know, I was a little toasted back there, both emotionally, physically, and otherwise. I am a mom of 3. My eldest just happens to be transgender. But I think my biggest achievement as a person and my legacy, hopefully, will be birthing 3 children and taking care of them single-handedly from when the eldest was 12. So I think that's, to me, my ultimate. I did something right by raising those 3 people. Of course, most people, when they say, who are you? You talk about what you do. But ultimately, you could erase everything that I've done in my life, all the books, all the speaking engagements, all the speeches. But those 3 people, I think that's where my heart is. So who am I? I'm a mom of 3. Ultimately, I'm a mom of 3 children, and I'm proudly Nigerian, with all of the drama and the shenanigans on a not so good day. If you catch me on my bad day, I'm agitating the governor of Texas usually. But this, since I moved to Atlanta, I'm going to be agitating the governor of Georgia, and we shall be there on the 27th of February, agitating the governor. And on a good day, I'm a pediatrician seeing patients in the clinic and loving on the babies. And on a regular day, I'm dancing on the streets, listening to Skyport, Here's to You. I mean, that's it. So that just aged me right there. Because I think
I love it.
That record came out in the 80s.
I love it. And I love the fact you said I'm a proud Nigerian. Like, is there any other type of Nigerian? Because all my Nigerian friends, very proud.
I don't know that there's any other type of Nigeria, but I do want to say proud because we had a sitting president call my country a shithole country. Right. And so words matter. Words matter. Mm-hmm. So some people will take that to heart. They maybe think that we're all suffering in Nigeria. We live on trees, you know, we all the things.
Right.
But Nigeria has skyscrapers. It has multi-million dollar homes that I can't even touch, you know. So, I mean, I'm proud of Nigeria. And then it has the slums, and it has good food, and then it has drugs, and it has death, and it has kidnapping and all the things. But also Nigeria produced me. So Nigeria did something right, and I'm proud of it for that.
Absolutely. And we forgot one accolade that you just added to your resume, comedian, because we both went up on stage for the first time, told some jokes.
Actually, you know what? In that same line, my first feature indie movie just came out. So, you know, I guess I'm a creative. It's called y'all go check it out. It's called Bride Price, not The Bride Price, but Bride Price, the movie. Bride Price, the movie. And I play myself. You know, you have arrived when you play your own self. I play a Nigerian mother, a Yoruba Nigerian mother. Well, I'm not Yoruba, but I'm a Nigerian mom. And I played a Nigerian mom, and the producer and the director, they told me that I was the only one that once I auditioned, I was the first to audition for that role. And I was the last to audition for the role. They were like, okay, that's it. It's yours. So I played myself. I'm adding those things to my resume today.
Her resume is always updating. So got to stay on top of it. All right, so Dr. Lulu, let's get right into this. We're gonna go in heavy here. As I mentioned at the introduction, I like to start the conversations talking about setbacks, failure, mistakes, however you want to phrase that, lessons. So tell me about the most difficult moment you've experienced or a challenging period that you had to overcome either in your professional career or personal life. What happened? How'd you get through it? And lastly, and most importantly, what did you learn from it?
Three words. I filed bankruptcy. Oof. I know in a world where I was, trigger warning, where I was bullied at seven, from the age of seven till I was 10. I was sexually assaulted and raped in medical school. I dated an abusive man who one time gave me a left backhand slap that I lost hearing temporarily on my whichever ear. I was married to my ex-husband who was verbally and emotionally abusive. I've been divorced twice, but I'm telling you, filing bankruptcy did it for me. And I think it's because of maybe my complicated relationship with money. We all have a complicated relationship with money. And if you don't think you do, then you're lying. And so I put my worth with money. I put my worth with money. And I think I didn't understand that filing bankruptcy, I looked at it as the end. But really, I should have looked at it as the beginning. Coulda, woulda, shoulda, but I did not, right? But I grew up having this weird relationship with money. I just felt like I never had enough. And now I'm thinking it's a trauma response. I was probably raised that way. I say I grew up. I didn't say I was raised, but probably I was raised that way. I probably saw the people around me maybe miserly and having a difficult relationship with money. So I grew up always wanting to have enough money with this scarcity mindset. And so when I had to file bankruptcy, I literally was suicidal. And that's why I know it is the most impactful fail. But now that I know better, my coach says, you either win or you learn.
Right.
There's no failure, is what she says. And I love that way of looking at it. Is either mm-hmm. I'm winning, which is how we started this talk, or I'm learning. Mm-hmm. So I learned mainly to not so much to manage my money better. No, I just learned that I am not my money. And money doesn't define me. And I have worked bigger than money. That is what I learned. So, yeah, you either win or you learn. And I had to file bankruptcy, and I nothing could shake the feeling. And that's why I think we say your thoughts matter, our thoughts matter, because our thoughts create certain feelings and certain emotions. And even though I had three beautiful children, I lived in a beautiful house that I was paying the mortgage every month. I had three cars. It was a 4-bedroom, X amount of 1,000 square foot with a yard and a dog and a spouse that loves me. My parents are both alive. All my siblings are alive. Mm-hmm. But I had to get to that place where I literally wanted to drive off of the highway. Thinking, yes, but I filed bankruptcy. I'm a failure.
Right. That was your definition of true success, right? The money, the association of money. So
money, yes. And you couldn't even tell me. You couldn't tell me anything. You couldn't tell me anything. Now I know better. And I know when I was on Oprah, I don't know if that's the reason I got on Oprah, but when I got on Oprah, the question they asked us was, which is better, success or service? I really believe in my heart that I got on Oprah because everyone said success. Everyone said service, and I said success. I really believe that. Not because I was going out to be polarizing, but because I truly believe that success is more important than service. And here's why. And I told them, I said, Oprah is me successful. Oprah is a household name because she's successful at what she does. And it's not about service. When you think Oprah, you're not thinking service. Yes, we know she has philanthropy and all that. But the first thought is success. So let's call a spade a spade. And then I went further and I said, when you think about Simone Biles is a young Black woman who has dominated gymnastics. Mm-hmm. When you hear Simone Biles, you hear success in gymnastics. When you hear Steve Jobs, you hear success in Apple. So success is for me. And I say that, and then I brought it back down to service. I said, even the best service must be successful to be impactful. Mm. Otherwise, it's burnout.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wrote. I mean, I wrote because you have to write a little essay.
Right.
I wrote that. I said, Oprah is me and I am her, but Oprah is me successful. She's an example of what's possible for me. And when she came on and called my name, she said, Dr. Lulu, I heard what you said. I am you. You are me. We're so connected. That's what Oprah said to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know she read my response and I know it resonated with her. She said, Dr. Lulu, I heard what you said. I am you, you are me, we're both connected. And that is true.
Mm-hmm.
She is me with massive success. And so I had to redefine what I mean about what success means to me and eliminate money as a defining factor because success doesn't always mean money. And that's what I wrote to Oprah.
I love that because it reminds me of a few different things. And I have a follow-up to what you just said. And before I even say that, I would say just from our small, very few interactions that you are successful. I think this Oprah represents the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at success as a spectrum, right? It's not that you are successful because you're very accomplished, pediatrician, lieutenant, colonel. I mean, like you've done quite a bit, right? But what came to mind is the word perspective, which happens to be my favorite word in the English English language.
Really?
About, you
change, wow. You change, I love
your,
that.
You changed your perspective on what it means to be successful, and you changed your association to money. So the follow-up question is for you, Dr. Lulu. You mentioned that you got a coach. So I want to know, what made you get a coach, and how did they work with you to help you change your association with money?
Okay, so I did not get a money coach, mm-hmm. Because I know there are money coaches out there. Right. And actually, as a matter of fact, I didn't get a coach for that. I got a coach. I have multiple coaches. I think I have like, at this point, I have like four or five. It's actually my speaking coach that said that. She didn't say that in reference to money. She just says that because she's a business coach. Now, I mean, when I hired her because I wanted to go into speaking. Mm-hmm. And I hired her because I was kind of at a crossroads. Should I do coaching? Should I do speaking? You know, I was just kind of, and so I hired her because, I don't know, I just hired her. And then, but she says that, and I love that quote. But I love coaching because coaching specifically is about moving forward. And I think that's what I want people to understand. I'm a coach and I'm a consultant. As a consultant, I come in and I say, okay, so your child is having a headache, sore throat, and a fever. Okay, so generally, when they have headache, sore throat, and a fever, it's strep throat. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to take this medicine. You're going to do the hokey pokey. You're going to down, you know, that kind of thing. That's a consultant. As a coach, I come in and I say, what do you want? And my job is to help you see it and help you become it and help you move forward and not remain where you are. Because generally, to get a coach, you are stuck somewhere, which is what I said. I hired a coach because I wanted to become a speaker. So the coach really doesn't tell you what to do. They guide you. They shine the light for you. They may be maybe a step ahead of you, maybe. But what they're asking is, where do you want to go? Where do you see yourself? And most importantly, what do you think is in the way? And so what she did for me was help me see that I was in the way. Wow. My thoughts were in the way. My, like you said, my perspective of money and who I am and how successful I am was in the way. And what really is success was in the way. Let me tell you, this past week, I was at a Christian event here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I met a Nigerian lady, and because I said something, I made a comment, and then like everybody just kind of flocked to me. At break time, I was like, wait, what? All I said was, I'm a mama beast, and you know, my child is right. And then she said, she's a Nigerian and she's queer, and she never ever met another Nigerian who's so proudly queer and proudly out, and just, you know. And then we had a day where she came and helped me unpack my boxes because she was like, oh my God, you're like my rich queer auntie. But I say that because she said, oh my God, you're so successful. She said it, and I could tell it came from her heart. I was like, wait, you think? She said, I said, you think so? She said, of course you are. And then she starts telling me, just like you said, you've done this and you've done this and you've done this. And I was like, oh my God. And she took me back to that place where I missed the mark again. I keep thinking, is bigger. And I think some of it is society. Some of it is capitalism. Some of it is trauma. You know, some of it is also just the way I was raised to always think that I'm not good enough, or that there's a bigger me, or there's a better me. And it's dangerous, to say the least. It's very dangerous to not
absolutely
get to that point here where you're satisfied and feel like you have done enough, you have enough, you are enough.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you are successful. Let's go. So let's switch gears here for a second and talk about your time in the military. Now I'll be very transparent with you. I think what really pulled me in, because you're right, you do have that natural aura about you, or what the French would say, je ne sais quoi, that pull to you, but I was very intrigued about your experience in the military. So I would love if you would share about your time in the military as a lieutenant colonel commander in the U.S. Air Force. what was it like as a woman, a Black woman at that, in a high-ranking position, having mostly men report to you?
I think I will also add a Black immigrant woman. Never forget that I'm Nigerian. And it's not, there's nothing against you. It's part of my identity.
Right.
So first of all, I did not join the Air Force to become a lieutenant colonel. I did not join the Air Force to become a commander. It just fell on my laps. I had just gotten divorced from my ex-husband. Mm-hmm. And I was with the kids one day and I was like, guys, you know, I don't want to work as a pediatrician anymore. I don't want my practice anymore. I think I got burned out from seeing 60 patients every day. And I just didn't want to be a pediatrician in my practice anymore. Mm-hmm. It's that two things together, not a pediatrician, but just a pediatrician in my practice. And I was just tired of it. I was tired. And so my middle child said, Mom, and I was just like, you know, do y'all have any ideas? Like literally they were 12, maybe 12, 10 and like 6. And I was like, do y'all have any ideas what mommy can do? And the eldest was like, But the middle was like, you know, wasn't grandpa like a pilot in the Air Force? Maybe you could become a pilot, you know? And I think he just said it like, maybe you could join the Air Force. He just said it with so much innocence. And I loved him at that moment. He was like, I don't know, maybe you could join the Air Force. And it went away, you know? I said, wait, freeze. Mm-hmm. You're right. Like, really? I was like, yes. Why not? And what, I know you said perspective is a favorite word. My favorite two phrases are what if and why not, right? Mm. But my favorite word is compassion. And we can talk about that later on. But I was like, why not? And he was like, wait, Mom, are you serious? I was like, yes, I'm serious. I'm like, Mom. And then the eldest was like, Mom, I think he was just joking. I was like, well, I'm not joking. So I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. You check the Air Force. You check the Army. You check the Navy, and I'll check the Marines. Find out what's the cutoff age, because I'll be 42 in March. That's what I said. I said, I'll be 42 this year. So let's find out really quickly. Literally, I deployed the kids. And I went again and said, well, Mom, for the Marines, you have to be like, I don't know, I forgot, maybe 20 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then one said, for the Navy, you have to be such and such, I think 38. And I was like 42, so I was like two. And then I said, for the Army, there's no limit. I was like, there's no limit. I said, no, there's no limit. I said, but I really want the Air Force. I was like, well, I'll check the Air Force. Well, you have to be 42.
Mm.
And I was like, wait, what? You have to be 42. I was like, I'll be 42 in March. Okay, quickly, let's get to work. And literally, I got on it was Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. Mm-hmm. And I got on my computer and I Googled, how do you join the Air Force? I said, oh, you have to find a recruiter. I said, okay, who is my recruiter for this area? And mm-hmm. I found him, Charles. And I sent him an email. I said, listen, I called him, I think. And he was like, okay, ma'am, so I am at the airport going home for Martin Luther King. I'm going to call you as soon as I get back. I was like, sure, make sure you call me because I'm going to be 42, like literally. And he hung up and he told me, he said, Doc, when I hung up, I couldn't believe my luck. I said, what do you mean? He said, I've never recruited a lieutenant colonel before. He said, I made his year because he brought in a lieutenant colonel. It's like a huge deal. I was like, okay, I didn't care. I'm going to be 42. I just need to. And so I signed up and they said, well, you got to go for basic training. I was like, what's that? He's like, well, you have to leave your family. You have to go to Alabama, mm-hmm. to the Air Force training, whatever. I was like, what? What did I do? He's like, no, man, you can do it. I was like, no, I can't. He's like, listen, you got this. It's not hard. It's such and such and such. It's so many weeks. What? But anyway, I said, well, I'm going to do this because I will try anything once. That's mm-hmm. my thing. So, yes, I signed up. I came in and I had to speak to the colonel. And they gave me, they said, well, ma'am, you have 23 years experience. At that point, I was 23 years old as a physician. They said, so you're going to come in most likely as a lieutenant colonel. And I was like, wait, what? What does that mean? He said, oh, you're going to be like the commander. I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, I don't want to do this. And then he sent me to the, connected me to the commander, the recruiting colonel of the of Lackland Air Force Base. And then she called me, Dr. Wilson. She's a pediatrician like me. And she was like, you can do this. And she just made me feel better. She said, is there any question you have? She has syphilis. Everybody was so excited that I couldn't believe. I was like, oh, you're Kuna Ume? I was like, we heard about you. I'm like, what? Because I was coming in at 42. Never before I walked in from the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina, with my high heels and my fancy dreadlocks. And I was like, you know, I had, well, in all fairness, I cut my locks, but I was coming in with this free spirit because I'm a free spirit. Mm-hmm. And I got there. I was like, first of all, I had two big red suitcases full of like fancy stuff. They're like, ma'am, suitcases over there. I was like, wait, what? It's like, over there. I'm like, okay. You know, it's like, okay. So I put my suitcases there. And they put my suitcases, and I never saw my suitcases again until the day we left. They're like, you're gonna get fatigues, and you're gonna get this and then that, and boots, and like ugly green boots. I was like, and then I came in. I was sworn in May, mm-hmm. and on May 31st, and this other lady was sworn in May 24th. Mm-hmm. Both of us were lieutenant colonels, so she was older than me by 5 days or whatever number of days. Right. So she was the first to be commander because it's based on your age at the rank.
Right.
The white girl. And I went to the office. She said, no, negative. I'm not going to be commander. I don't know anything about being a commander. And I was summoned to the office. I said, well, you are the next oldest and most senior officer. You are commander. And I was like,
wow,
I'll do it. But before I said I'll do it, I said to myself, I said, there's a reason for this. However, my coach, the same coach, says, say yes and then figure it out. Mm. Now, I didn't know her then. But later on, I learned that sentence. Say yes. Whenever an opportunity lands on your life, say yes and then figure it out. And see, it was now, in my mind, it was now black versus white. Okay? It was black woman versus white woman. It was African woman versus American woman. It was all of that. And so I called my father, the only other Air Force officer decorated three-star general. I forget sometimes. That I know. So I called my dad. My dad said, my daughter, everything you've ever gone through in your life has brought you here. You can do this. And he didn't say anything else, but that's what he said. My dad always affirms me. Mm. I said, you got this. I said, how do I? He said, you know how to do it. I said, how? I don't. He said, you know what to do. That was it. Okay. And so I went and they gave me an ADC, which is someone who's already been in the Air Force, who was going to teach me how to talk and how to walk and how to command mm-hmm. overnight. And overnight, I had to read all kinds of things and all kinds of how to walk, how to stand. When I walk in the room, before I walk in the room, he says, room 10 shut. Everybody gets up. I'm like, wait, that's me? You know? And he was just like crazy. And so one night I played a game with them. It wasn't funny, but I played it anyway, just to get them to relax. I would walk out of the room and I walk in the room. And I walk out of the room and I walk in. And every time I walked out, they said, every time I walk in, I was like, this is crazy. And so it was. And you get into the base and they salute you at the mm-hmm. back, and you have to be over meetings and meetings and meetings and meetings and meetings. The reason I left the Air Force is because I was stuck in the room, meetings after meetings. Mm. I was not cut out for that. Mm. I have to be seeing patients. I have to be outdoors.
Right.
I am a free spirit. Mm-hmm. I loved to walk around the base so they will see me everywhere because I'm just not a sit down, have a meeting kind. I was begging them. And they're like, oh, guess what? You're going to be a full colonel. And you're going to be the SGH of Tyndall Air Force Base, which is the base at Destin, Florida, in Panama City, Florida. Mm-hmm. It's a smaller base. I was going to be over the end. I think it was more fear of more meetings. I was like, okay, I'll do it. If y'all can guarantee me, I can at least see patients once or twice a week. Oh, man. Well, unfortunately, when you're a commander, and I was like, I'm a pediatrician. I just kept diminishing myself. So going back now, looking back at it, mm-hmm. I studied for Air War College. I passed my Air War College. I scaled my daddy was like, wow. He did his Air War College and he used to be that. He was like, when I did my Air War College, I was like, oh, it was, I said, but daddy, it's easy. He said, who says Air War College is easy? You know, but to me, when it comes to studying and taking exams, it's nothing. It was for me doing the work of having meetings after meetings. And I just truly was in a weird place. If I could do it all over, I would stay.
Right.
My ex-wife, she begged me. She's like, please stay. You know? And they were like, you want to retire as a colonel. You're going to get full benefits and all these things. Mm-hmm. I just felt I was called for a different path.
Right.
And I convinced myself that I was. I was very happy while I was in, as far as like day to day. But I was the medical director. It was crazy. Lots and lots. And I love all that. But I really wanted to see patients as well. And I couldn't get that.
Right.
And I know because as you get higher, naturally, your commanding position. I was also afraid of war. I didn't want to be sent to war. I didn't want to go to war. I sent people to war. Some came back and some didn't come back. You know, so all of these thoughts were the thoughts that, you know, it was me versus me. It's always you versus you.
Right.
The part of me that wanted to be out and free won that battle. And so right. I got out. Yeah.
Right. And so I think I know the answer to this, but what do you think you learned the most from that, your experience in the military in the United
States?
That I can.
I can do whatever I put my mind to. I can be whatever I put my mind to. I can become whoever I put my mind to. Because that lady, I don't want to use the word chickened out, but she did. She chickened out of being commander. And then it was like, well, you're next. And it was two of us were the only two lieutenant colonels on the base. And I did not want to let myself down. I didn't want to let my kids down. I didn't want to let my dad down. I didn't want to let Black women down. I didn't want to let Africans down. I didn't want to let immigrants down. This was our chance. People used to come up to me and say, Dr. Ume, Colonel Ume, thank you. Because I was instrumental to the dreadlocks being the whole rule about against dreadlocks. Because I had locks. I cut my locks before I joined the Air Force. But I wanted my locks back. And I was like, it doesn't make any sense that Africans, Black people cannot have their dreadlocks. What do you mean? What do you mean? What does that mean? I was like, no, we're going to fight this. Mm. And people were like, Konome, thank you so much. You know, I used to paint my nails different colors. And I'm like, oh my God, it's against the laws. And I was like, yeah, it's just, and I was like, eh. Y'all make these rules, you know? I was like, there's nothing against making the rules, but we're human first.
Right.
We're humans first. And so I wasn't going to last there. I never got written up or anything, but I just, it was just not me in the full extent of me. I'm a Black butterfly. My blog is called Words by Black Butterfly because that's
right.
Butterflies are not to be kept in a little vase. What will happen?
They'll die. Absolutely. And so on that note, for the person that's listening to this or watching this, and they're at that crossroad where, you know, they're in a pretty great career or position, but their gut, their instinct is saying, this is good, but it's not it. What advice would you give to that person that's at that crossroad right now?
Three words. Just do it, Nike, right? Just do it. Mm-hmm. Three words. Just do it. Bet on yourself. Mm. Bet on yourself. And then ask yourself, what if it's bigger and better than I ever imagined? What if it's bigger and better? The universe is always conspiring for greatness for you. The universe is always on your side. If you go back and look back, when I go back and look back, I see how the universe moves all the chess pieces. Mm. As long as I put my mind to that, so the first question is, what do you want? Mm. Second question is, what if it's bigger than you can even imagine? Mm. It's usually that. As long as you don't give yourself a limit, well, I want it tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, if you want it tomorrow, I mean, there's some things that can be done tomorrow. But as long as you believe in your heart, you have that radical self-belief, which is what I have. Radical self-belief, radical self-love, radical self-advocacy. Asking for what you want. Going for no. Go for no. Mm-hmm. Because when you go for no, the truth is many a time you get a yes. I'm yet to find someone who has said no to something that I asked for, like from my belly, I always get a yes. Or I might get a not yet. Mm. And now that depends on how much do you really want it. If you really want it, not yet is a win. If you really want it, even no is a win, because that means not now, not this one, not this path. Maybe make a U-turn. You know what I mean? Like there's always, so that's why she says win or learn.
Right.
So learn what is it that I need to do to get a yes. Or you know what I mean? Like I in September of 2021, I did a 90-day go for no. I asked 100, it was actually 100 days in the end. I did 100 days of asking. I was asking every single thing that I wanted in my life. I asked this guy, I went to his restaurant and I was like, oh my God, I love this place. I want to do my talk show here. So I said, who owns this place? They showed it to me, Kent. I said, Kent, I would like to do a talk show in your restaurant. He said, which day do you want to do it?
I love that.
I said, he said, yeah. What day? I was like, what day do you have open? He said, well, Tuesdays are wide open. And I did my Dr. Lulu's Pride Corner. We did live talk show every Tuesday for a solid year. We had guests coming live. We had a live freaking audience. That's why I know I'm ready for my TV show. And then I did a book signing at the bookstore. And while I was there, these people came and I said, if you can guess my age, you can win a book. And then they tried 36, 34, 32, 39, 41. Yeah. And I was like, no. I said, but you know what? You get a book anyway.
Right.
And so I said, what do you do for a living? And the guy said, oh, I'm a radio DJ. I was like, you know, I've always wanted a radio show. He said, really? I said, yes. He said, well, we don't have any opening now, but I'll keep you in mind. The next week, I get a call. So, Dr. Lulu, this is Adam Ace. Remember you said you wanted a radio show? We have an opening.
There you go.
And I had the Parent Hour, which was my radio show, for 2 years.
Wow.
I mean, just ask. Literally just ask. The universe is like, that's what you want? Okay, cool. Are you sure you want it? Because I will make it happen. Mm-hmm. And so what you think matters and what you think about yourself matters. Because if you also ask for negative, the universe is just there. The source is just there. The laws of attraction, the laws of manifestation, they're just there to, if you put your mind to it, it's going to happen.
Man, you know? I love that challenge that you did. What, 30 days, go for no? That's what you did?
90 days,
go for no.
Yes.
I think I'm going to take that on. I'm going to start with 30, but I like that. I love that because it actually reminds me, so many years ago, the publisher of Success Magazine, Darren Hardy, I don't know if he's still the publisher of that, but he had mentioned that when he started out in real estate as a young kid in his early 20s, he had no contact base, no client base. So what he did is he took out a sheet every day and he'd put 30 small boxes and he would go and knock on doors to introduce himself to the neighborhood that he wanted to service as a realtor. And his goal was not to get 30 yeses, but to get 30 no's. And he wouldn't go home until he got 30 no's for like 30 days or something like that. So that just reminded me of that. And I love the go for no. I've heard the concept before. I think
it's a book. It's a book.
Come across it's a book, as well.
Yeah, it's a book. It's called Go For No. It's a very short read. Very yes. short. I do Audible a lot. It's called Go For No. Like literally, it's the most beautiful thing ever. And yeah. this is not, it doesn't have to be business. I just want, what it does is it teaches you to ask for what you want and teaches you to insulate yourself from thinking that no is bad.
Yes. Change that perspective of no.
No means next one, yeah. next opportunity. That's mm-hmm. what no means. Go for it. Go for it. Just ask a lot. Even the Bible, for those who are Bible thumpers, even the Bible says, ye do not receive because ye do not ask.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love that. Oof, so many gems there. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Lulu, mm-hmm. You're Nigerian born. You grew up in a Christian household.
Catholic
household, excuse me. And you're now also a member of the LGBTQT community. So tell my listeners, what was it like when you officially came out? What did you learn from that period in your life?
So the first thing is I've always been a member of the community. It's not a member. It's not a community that one joins. It's a community that one is born into. I've always been Nigerian. I didn't become mm-hmm. a member of Nigeria. And I love that question. It's a very fair question. It's a very fair phrasing. Mm-hmm. We do call ourselves members. I mean, some people do. We do call ourselves a community. I get that. But I also want to be clear that you don't join it. Like you don't say, okay, now I'm going to join. You are born this way. So I've always been Black. I didn't become Black. I've always been queer. I didn't become queer. So my story goes this way. I was born queer. But I went to an all-girls high school. And I went to high school at 11, which is when most people go to high school in Nigeria, because when I was growing up, because we had a school system that you go to school in high school at 11.
Right.
So I went to high school at 11, and then I started noticing that I like looking at the girls. I like them. It was an all-girls school. I like looking at the girls. When I got a little older, I'm not sure exactly when, at what point, maybe between 11 and 15, it's a 5-year high school, so I graduated at 16. I went to medical school at 17. But I was just noticing that I like girls. I kind of like their bodies. I kind of noticed that. I didn't know what it meant. And I kind of didn't pay it any mind. Then I started hearing the word lesbian. It's women who like women. I'm like, oh, okay. But I like guys too. So, well, I also like men. I mean, boys, I mean, whatever age, I don't know. I was also attracted to men. So I was like, well, maybe I'm a lesbian. But I like men. But I didn't know what it was. But I think lesbian was the only name then. And then I was graduating from high school, and one of my classmates in my yearbook wrote, "You're homosexual." I mean, I think she wasn't saying it. And it was like, you know, you sign my yearbook and then write a little message. And she said, "And I also know that you're a homosexual." She wrote that. And I was like, wow. And I was so happy that somebody noticed that, because it was affirming. It was like, yes, I guess I am, you know. So I knew the word homosexual and I knew the word lesbian. So I knew I was homosexual, but I did not quite identify with lesbian. You know, it's like, when I say words matter, I'm not joking. but also representation matters. I didn't know anybody who was attracted to men and women. I didn't know what the word was. And then I just told my dad because I knew he was going to read my yearbook. I was like, okay, I'm just going to tell you before you read the yearbook. So I told my dad, I said, I kind of like girls and I like boys. And my dad took a deep breath and affirmed me, believe it or not, in the sense that he said, I think it's a phase. Mm. I say that's affirming because he didn't tell me, shut up, don't say that again, you're going to hell. So even though he didn't know any better, he didn't say all the negative things.
That's he could have one. Said.
Because my auntie said that. Mm-hmm. I had an aunt who I said, so, you know, such and such. And she was like, don't you ever say that again. Don't you ever think that again. That is from the devil. The devil is tempting you. The devil wants your soul. You're going to go to hell. And I looked up to my aunt and I was like, I don't want to go to hell. But I didn't understand how did I didn't make myself this way. And so I went really hard at squishing and burying that.
Depressing. Yeah.
And then I kept growing up and you can try burying the fact that you're black. Try squishing the fact that you're a woman. You can't. But I was like, I'm going to do my very best to focus on the attraction to men because I am, after all, also attracted to men. And then somewhere along the line, the word bisexual came into my orbit. I was like, oh, I guess that's what I am because I'm kind of equally attracted to men and women. Wow. I want to say that story because I want to, number one, set people free. Number two, I want to normalize self-discovery. So it doesn't mean that's when I became a member. See the difference? Mm-hmm. That's when I had a word to describe what I was.
Right.
I want to use that to premise the whole transgender that, oh, it's new. Or it's like, no, you know, people are becoming trans or they're joining the trans movement. And the truth is, a lot of transgender people, and I've interviewed too many, too numerous. My own child is trans. They've told me they've always known. But in their home, it was like a taboo. Don't mention it. Don't say it. The way their parents acted, the way I acted to my child, you know, she was like, I'm not telling you because you're evil. You know, you don't like this and you're homophobic. And so a lot of times people mistakenly think that being LGBT is like a fad. It's like the new thing. Mm. People who are LGBT are ostracized and bullied and killed. Who do you know that gets a choice and says, yes, I want LGBT, mm-hmm. when I know for certain that I may never be able to walk into spaces? People will seek to destroy me, right? It's like saying, let me see. It's slavery is going on. I will choose black because, you know,
right.
black people have the, no,
yeah.
you don't choose to be black, but guess what you become radically? You become a very proud black person because people are coming for you.
Mm.
So that's why the word pride is now almost always associated with LGBT because people are coming for them so fast. The harder they come, the prouder we are, right? So, I wanted to tell that story because it didn't matter whether I was Nigerian. It didn't matter whether I'm, you know, all of the things. It didn't matter. I don't care how religious people are. People are who they are all day. And so Nigerians are queer. I know a lot. On LinkedIn, I'm like a magnet for all the queer Nigerians because I'm so out there. But also because I'm a proud mother. A lot of them wish their moms were like me. A lot of them pray that they have a mother like me. And so I just adopt all of them. I'm like, come on, I'll love you until such and such. A lot of them say they wish they could come out to their parents, which I don't use the word coming out. If you listen to my second TED Talk, I make a case for inviting in as opposed to coming out. Because being LGBT is a function of safety. So if I don't think Corey Kareem is safe, I'm not going to tell you that I'm queer.
Fair.
Because I don't know what you're going to do with the information.
Fair.
Right. So it's kind of, so anyway, right. That's the long answer to the fact that it didn't matter that I was Nigerian. It didn't matter that my auntie told me that I was going to go to hell. Right. And I don't have a relationship with that auntie anymore because I don't know. Even though I miss her and I love her, she raised me. In her mind, I'm somehow dirty and bad. And you just learn to find your family of choice.
Mm.
And you learn to live with that.
So I will follow up to that. And you might have slightly addressed it already, but
okay.
Just for my listeners and my audience, so they're super clear. So for that person who knows that they're queer, or you can even maybe extend it to a person that wants to make a life-altering decision, like maybe it's changing a complete career path, or maybe getting out of a long-term relationship, whatever the big thing is.
Mm-hmm.
If they're unhappy in their situation, to that person listening right now, they're on the fence of inviting people in, as you phrased it to me. What advice would you give to that person who's terrified that this decision could, you know?
I would say you have the power because ultimately it's your life and your destiny. And the universe, source, God, wants you to fulfill your destiny. Your destiny is yours to fulfill. It's also obviously a safety thing, right? I'm not going to sit here and pretend that LGBT folks are not getting killed in Uganda, right? Mm. Or Nigeria. I'm not going to sit here and say that. So right. It's also a safety thing. But I'll tell you a story. I told you earlier on that I came back from my workout this morning to come to your podcast. This morning, I left my apartment at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I wanted to get my 20,000 steps in. I got 10,700 in, so I did good. But I just turned right outside my apartment, and I just started walking. But I was listening to Skyline, Skyport, Skyjammer, Sky, because I was a child of I'm a child of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And an hour and 40 minutes. And then I would see some people and I would say, here's to you. And then they would look at me and some will fist bump me. And then some of them will link hands with me and I'll go around and then I'll go around it. And I'll, you know, and I could tell that my joy, people were smiling at me because of that, right? They don't know me. Listen, I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I have a natural high that I've tapped into, but I know the power of seeing someone happy. I've known the power of seeing somebody sad. I've known the power of being suicidal, and I'm choosing every day to be happy and to even dare to infect you with my joy. I love being a black butterfly. One thing that butterflies do is they go from flower to flower to flower to flower. What are they doing? They are pollinating. Mm. They're spreading joy. That's what they're doing. And so I dare to be a black butterfly. Mm. I dare to spread my own joy and my own love and my way. Right. And I love it. So this morning I did that. And so I want to empower you, whatever brings you joy. One of the songs I love to listen to is Anita Baker's You Bring Me Joy. You bring me joy when I'm down. That is so powerful. So whatever joy is to you, bring yourself joy when you're down. And just maybe you might get someone else to share in that joy for 2 or 3 minutes. Those people that linked arms with me today and danced with me, they don't know me, but I bet you they will never forget me. They'll be like, wow, someone just danced with me on the street. I mean, We need to bring back what are all the things that our inner child liked to do.
Right.
I'm going to be 55. Most people don't believe that. Thank God. But more so because whenever I'm walking down the street, I say, you know, I don't think I know anybody else in this world of 8 billion people who would do what I did this morning. A Black woman daring to be happy, dancing, listening to my music. Mm. I don't know anyone else who would do that.
Right.
Exactly. Because I I've seen suicide and I've looked it in the eye.
Right.
And then I've seen joy. I've seen happy people. It's a very easy decision. It's a no-brainer. It's an immediate yes.
Right.
So I would say to that person, even if you are only out to yourself, or even if you're only inviting yourself into your own one-man or one-woman party, I want you to start that journey today, because people will start noticing something about you. They're not going to know what it is. Like you said, je ne sais quoi. Mm-hmm. I happen to speak French. So they say, je ne sais quoi, or je ne sais pas, which means I don't know. But this person, I like them. And that's all I'm asking you to do. Say to yourself, I like you. I want to be with you. I want to love all of you. I was diagnosed in 2015 with something called fibromyalgia, which is a state of constant pain in your entire body. And now we know it's because the body keeps the score. Your body keeps all of that trauma. And I am always hurting. But I'm also the one who will hug everybody at the party, because I know some people just need a hug. Right. And that's all they need. And you just save their life. Somebody wrote on Facebook one time when I was still active duty. She said, she just wrote it and tagged me. I was like, I don't know. She said she will never forget the 3-minute hug that Colonel Ume gave her. I don't even remember when I gave the hug. But she said, I didn't know she was going through a divorce. She had just lost a pregnancy. I didn't know any of that. I just know she looked like she needed a hug, and I held on a little longer. And she wrote a post about it. I would never forget that. And so needless to say, I hug people. I give people kisses on their cheeks. They're never expecting it. And I just see the way they just, their eyes close to receive it, or their eyes light up, or they smile. It costs me nothing. But if I tell you, if you hear Dr. Lulu has fibromyalgia, you'll be like, no way. Because I'm not going around saying, oh, I have fibromyalgia. But it is what it is. So you always get to choose, is what I'm saying. You get to choose which of the two paths to take.
I love that. And I had another conversation about choice, because I did, maybe you're familiar with this course, Landmark. I did a Landmark course, which is like personal development, many years ago, 2015. And I remember and I've said this story more than a few times. So I did it in my session. There was about 100 people in there from all different professions, walks of life, color, whatever backgrounds. And we all had to kind of share a story, or you could volunteer to. And this one lady shared her story, beautiful lady. She was there with her new husband, and she got up saying that, you know, she struggles with intimacy in her new marriage because she's still dealing with the trauma from her past marriage where her husband raped her. And I remember what the instructor said, and he said something to the effect of, you know, no one can ever erase what happened to you.
What happened to you, exactly.
You're right. And what happened to you is very unfortunate. It's very sad.
And it's validating, and it's real. It's true. But however, comma, go ahead.
But you have a choice whether you can use that story to empower you or disempower you.
That's it.
And I just think about that every day in my life. Like, Corey, what story are you running in your head right now? Is it adding to your life, or is it taking away from you right now? And so I thought about that when you used the word choice, because sometimes it could seem like we have no choice. It might be very little choice in the moment, for sure. But to say that you have no choice rarely ever is the actual scenario.
Fact, yes. I love that. Facts, facts. I love that. And for those who maybe sometimes say, oh, I can't make a decision. You have made decisions your whole life. You decided to go to medical school, in my case. You decided to move to Atlanta, right? You know how to make decisions. You know how to make decisions. You just need to make it. And I think one of the things I like to say is the definition of suffering is knowing that where you are is not working and consciously choosing to remain.
Wow.
That is the definition of suffering.
Wow.
And that's why my favorite word is compassion, because compassion means empathy plus how can I help? Mm-hmm. So I am in this kind of work, this service work, right? I'm in this kind of life work.
Right.
And so my duty is to ask, how can I help make your day better? Those people I worked, some of them were construction workers. I mean, I worked for an hour and 40 minutes. So it was a long time. I met a lot of people. I met families going to the Georgia Aquarium, kids, and I'll just point at them and laugh at them and smile at them and fist bump them and arm link with them and go. I know that they don't know me. Some of them probably think, oh, let me walk away. You know, I saw people that are like, I'm going to go over this way. I saw that. Yeah. But did it stop me? No. Because I know for the one who I'm locked eyes with, this lady was, she's walking around maybe giving tickets. She has her little tickets. And I said, here's to you. And I said, just for you. I said, I just love the things that you do. Here's to you. And she was like, and she was bopping with me. And then I was gone, right? But she will not forget. And so I want people to remember that you get to choose to leave people better than the way you met them. You get to choose. But the first person to do that to is self.
Mm-hmm.
You have to first leave yourself feeling better every day. I'm not saying live in a fake space of always happy. There's a word for that. It's called mania. That's not what we're talking about here. But I'm saying you get to choose that. Yes, even, let me tell you, when I said I was moving to Atlanta, everybody told me about the traffic. Listen, everybody said Atlanta traffic. And that's beautiful to watch how they limit themselves to, how they reduce all of Atlanta
to traffic. Yeah,
guess what? I said to myself, and? If I'm going from my house to Corey's house,
yeah,
and I know that there's traffic between me and Corey, I make a decision. If I want to go to Corey's house, I get in my car and I drive. Or I can take the MARTA. They have a surface light train, light rail.
Yeah.
Or I can walk. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm not going to say, oh, the traffic. I'm going to get on the traffic and say, well, I know this traffic is here because people also want to go where they're going. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I can choose to look at it. You know, there's this guy that said, the weatherman said, oh, it's good. And said, weatherman, why do you always predict rain the day I'm going to wash my car? The weatherman said, why do you always wash your car the day I predict rain?
Perspective. I love it.
Perspective. Yes.
I love it. I love it. So Dr. Lulu, you have two books about parenting children that are a part of the community, the LGBTQ plus community, to be specific.
Mm-hmm.
So what are one to three things you would tell a parent who's having difficulty accepting their child's, I don't know what the appropriate word to use here. I want to use the word identity, but you can correct
me. Yes, identity is perfect.
Right. So what do you say to that parent that's like, they're struggling with it, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they grew up very religious, maybe not, but they're struggling with that new identity from their child.
Multiple answers here. So the first thing is, I was your child. I was the queer child who told her parents and her auntie and all that. So I know your child because I was your child. I have been your child. And now I'm you. I'm also now a parent of a queer child. And so it all comes back down to decision making. You get to decide who do you want your child to know than you are. It's not your fault that society is branding your child as bad or whatever name that they're giving your child. But in the bigger context, your child doesn't know the governor. Your child doesn't know the legislatures who are making the laws. Your child doesn't know the pastor of your church. But your child knows you. And you are quintessentially the most important, and as I said at my Pecha Kucha talk, and the most influential person in your child's life. So what you think matters, what you say matters, what you do matters. And it doesn't matter what the law is. They can make any law about anti-trans. That's fine. Your child, your four-year-old baby doesn't know that law exists. But your four-year-old baby knows their mama is telling them not to be who they are. That's what your child remembers. We talked about childhood trauma. We talked about fibromyalgia. We talked about suicide. If you look at the studies, they've shown that because your body keeps the score. There's a study that was done in 95, the ACE study, I think 95 to 97, the ACE study, Adverse Childhood Experiences by Kaiser Permanente and the CDC here in Atlanta. They found that people who have been exposed to trauma in childhood before the age of 17, their body remembers. And they have kidney disease, heart disease, you know, hypertension, mental health challenges, all these things like fibromyalgia, you know, the things you don't even know why you're on blood pressure medicine, go back to your childhood. So if childhood trauma matters, then I need you to think twice before you traumatize your child unknowingly, because that's what I did. Repeatedly, unknowingly, because I had what we call internalized homophobia. I didn't like that I was queer. I didn't want to be gay. I didn't want it because my father told me it's a phase. So I was like, and the society said it's not right. And the church said I'm going to hell. All these things, right? But ultimately, who is the most influential person in your child's life? And that's you. So I want you to today replace the word I struggle with I can. I can do this. Don't worry about the how. Once you put your mind to what you want, the universe will find the Dr. Lulus of the world, will find the P flags of the world, will find the people that you need to meet. It never fails. And people call it coincidence. It's not coincidence. It's the ultimate game of chess that the universe is playing. Oh my God, really? Your child is also trans? Oh my goodness, I've been looking for a friend. You just see yourself saying, oh, I met this lady today. You know, there was a woman at the well. I used to teach Bible study when I was young, so I know a lot of Bible stories. There was a woman at the well, and Jesus met the woman, and Jesus told her this and told her that. But most importantly, Jesus saw her and didn't judge her, and didn't ostracize her. I want you to see your child. Don't judge your child. Don't ostracize your child. And when the lady left Jesus' presence, she knew she was touched by God. She knew she was touched by His Spirit. She went into the town and said, "Yo, I met this man today who told me everything I know. I met this guy today who told me everything about me." It's almost impossible for your child to not scream their mama because you saw them. You see them. You didn't judge them because truly you don't know. And I say this with my full chest. If you're not transgender, if you're not LGBT, you don't know. You don't have lived experience. And so you can't say, if you're not Black, you can't say anything about Blackness. If you're not an immigrant, you can't say anything about immigrants. If you're not a woman, you don't have a say about women. You can't talk about my uterus. You know, you can't take away my child, to my right to have a child. You know, you don't have a say because you're not. And once upon a time, Women couldn't vote. Women were supposed to be dressed up in dresses, in a frock, and wear an apron and bake cookies. That was a woman. Today, there's a religion that women have to cover themselves from head to toe. So think about all the atrocities that society has been committing and ask yourself, whose idea was that? If truly we are all made in God's image and likeness, then I am God and so are you. And that means my God is a woman. And that means my God's pronouns are she, her. Or maybe at the very least, they, them, because God is both all of the sexes. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, why is it that God is omnipotent and omni this and omni that and all these things, and yet we want to bring it all the way down to one gender? How is that even possible? God is so big and we don't understand them. We don't know them, but we do see them in each other. Right? We see God in each other. And so God has asked us to love the person, love your neighbor. Thank goodness for that commandment. The apostle said, Jesus, what is the biggest commandment? Father, Lord, Abba, what is the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, to love your neighbor. Thank God Jesus didn't say love your straight neighbor. Thank God Jesus didn't say love your white neighbor. Thank God Jesus didn't say love your black neighbor, love your non. No, God said, just love your neighbor. Who is your neighbor? Your child can be your neighbor depending on the context. Just another person that you see as God. Children are not voiceless. I had a guest on my podcast. I came, I said, oh, I'm so happy that I have, I'm a voice for my child. And I said, children are not voiceless. You are just not listening. What? I was like, Dr. Lulu, you're smart. You're just not listening. So your child is telling you who they are. Mommy, I don't want to wear that dress. Daddy, I don't want to, you know, whatever. You know, I don't know what your kid is saying, but whatever they're saying, you want to listen. And right. Then they're saying, shut up, don't say that again. Three words, tell me more. You want to lean in with curiosity because you don't know this thing. One of my favorite songs is in Tarzan. He said, I want to know. Please show me. I want to know about the strangers like me. Tell me now. Like he had a hunger to know, who are these people? They look like me. They're walking on their legs. They're not jumping on the trees. I want to know. Tell me right now. So you don't know. So ask your child to tell you. However, comma, don't expect your child to educate you because you're the adult. Go learn about it. If your child had some kind of rare disease, I'm just going to put it out there, like maybe some kind of rare blindness. I don't care what the doctor tells you. You're still going to go look it up, right? You're going to go look it up. You're not going to just say, oh, well, the doctor, you're going to check it. So you go get curious and look at it. Look for people who are like that. Ask questions. But don't put your child in that place as a teacher, as far as like your child is the only person who's going to tell you about it. But your child will be a teacher. Because your child is going to say, this is who I am. And your job is to now go learn more, right? But first by saying to your child, I don't understand this thing. I don't know what this thing is that you're telling me. But tell me more. How can I help make it easier? How can I make your burden lighter? How can I, what can I do? And that is a definition of compassion. Mm. I hear you. I see you. I feel you.
How can I help?
Yes. That's it. That is why compassion is mentioned in the Bible and empathy is not. That's what I came up with, that explanation. But compassion truly is when they say compassionate. They say compassionate thy savior. Compassionate thy savior. Because you have to learn how to ask, how can I help? Jesus came to help. Jesus didn't come to say, oh, yeah. I see you. I see you, dog. What up? Yeah. He must be nice. He must be hard. Holla. No. Jesus said, wait. When somebody just touched my cloak, because I felt some of my power leave me. Who is that person, right? The person was made whole. She stopped bleeding right away. And then Jesus said, wait, why are y'all crying that Lazarus died? Wait, hold up. Lazarus is not lying. He's just sleeping. So Jesus was always about soothing and making people feel better. That's what you're called to do. Hmm. Remember that. And also remember to ask for help. Jesus didn't do it alone. Jesus had helpers. In this case, the Tolulu's helper today is Corey Kareem, helping me magnify my voice. And that's what I said, the thing, that's what God said to me. Say, God said, go do the work and I'll send you helpers. And parents need to think that way. I don't understand this thing. I don't know what it is. Who can help me understand it? Rather than hush your mouth because my church says. Do you know the story about religious revolution? Do you know the atrocities that Christianity, the bloodshed?
Yeah.
Do you know? You know what I mean? Like
Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. It's not without. Okay, thank you. And then we now push it to the next level, what they did with slaves under the umbrella of religion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Please don't let us pretend that we don't know.
Right. Wow. Dr. Lulu, so much there. Wow, so much there. I feel I am
asking me questions.
My cup is full. My cup is full. And I'm ready to share some of this goodness with others. So as we wrap up here, Dr. Lulu, there's two things. One, if there is one takeaway you would want my listeners to leave with from this beautiful conversation that we gave birth to, what would that one takeaway be?
You are bigger than you think you are. You are made for more, much more. But in order to achieve that, I need you to begin by first accepting that you are enough and then showing gratitude for that. Another favorite word of mine, just remaining in that state of being grateful. And that's what I lost sight of when I was in the Air Force. I was never grateful for where I was and what change I was doing. Now I'm happy that I'm out and doing this, but I was not grateful. And when you're ungrateful, your spirit is not settled. Today, I'm very grateful that I get to live in this beautiful apartment on the 20th floor overlooking Manhattan. I wish I could show you my view from my apartment. It's breathtaking, right? And I'm grateful even for those who don't have the view, right? I'm grateful that I'm able to have the view while I can see, right? But even if I didn't see, you know, they say it doesn't take sight. It doesn't take sight. It takes vision to see the top, right? So I don't really need my sight. I just need my vision. So whatever vision you have for yourself, imagine if it's even bigger. And then take the first step today. I think I'm telling myself that because I need to send my IT guy the stuff for my website.
I love that today. I love that. And my very last one for you is, what's a quote or a mantra that you're currently living by?
Gosh. I don't know if I have one. Narrow it down.
If you could choose a favorite one, a go-to.
So there's a song by, what's the white rapper? Eminem,
yeah.
There's a song, and I think the hook is, I am whatever I say I am.
Yes, I know the song you're talking about. Yeah.
It just came to me because usually when I have an interview like yours, people send me questions. I don't look at them and I honestly don't prepare my answers. Mm-hmm. I just shoot from the hip, from my heart. I just speak. That's the song that's the phrase that's coming to me. I am whatever I say I am. I think I am one of the two most important words in the world. I am happy. Then I am happy. I am sad. Then I am sad. I am a mess, then I am a hot mess, you know. Right. And so words have power. So I am who I say I am is it. And for the parents out there, I want you to think about that from your child's angle. And the best way to think about it is to flip the coin and you think about your childhood and what did you say about your parent? In what context? What did you say about them? How do you feel about that today? I think that will help you put it in perspective. We have children dying of suicide every day. We have children being kicked out of their homes every day for what they didn't create, for what they didn't cause. My nonprofit is building homes for houseless LGBT teenagers. I know problem. It's a huge problem. It shouldn't be so. If you say you are who you are, then your child is also going to say they are who they are. So let's meet in the middle and leave everybody else out.
Wow. Dr. Lulu, thank you so much for blessing us with your presence. Guys, for my listeners, you all know I typically like to end each episode by saying this. Sometimes you don't need to learn something new or watch something new or listen to something new. Sometimes you just have to hear that somebody else is going through it or see that somebody else is going through it. So with that being said, Dr. Lulu and myself are out. Peace and love. Until the next time.